Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Howie Kasper James Show. Talk radio for fine minds. And now your host for the hour, Howie Kasper James.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Hallie Kasper-Jane Show. I'm your host, Hallie Kasper-Jane. The Hallie Kasper-Jane Show is brought to you today by Hemisphere Development. Hemisphere Development delivers socially responsible, sustainable solutions for large-scale, environmentally troubled properties. For more information, visit Hemisphere on its website at www.hemispheredev.com. Before we get started today, we invite you all to join our chat room live right here on our Blog Talk Radio page, where we promise to engage you in a very lively discussion of today's show. And what a show we have for you today. Here is a clue.
Ice cream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream. Ah! Ah! Tuesdays, Mondays, we all scream for Sundays.
We're going to have fun. Yep, today we are talking ice cream, a worldwide guilty pleasure. Call it ice cream, sorbet, custard, gelato, from Roman Emperor Nero, from Baghdad to Damascus, and Cairo to the Far East, and Chinese emperors, ice cream or its namesakes have titillated the palate and smacked the lips of the young and old for centuries. Today, the Hallie Kasper-Jane Show is going to take a look at ice cream and explore the latest trends in this delectable frozen food that is a worldwide cultural phenomenon. From music to the cinema, ice cream is celebrated. Who can forget the soda fountain scene in Frank Capra's iconic It's a Wonderful Life, when the young George Bailey serves Mary at the soda fountain with chocolate ice cream, and Mary, just as George leans down to finish scooping the ice cream, leans over towards George's deaf ear and whispers intimately to George that she will love him until the day he dies. Yes, we're talking all things ice cream today on the Hallie Kasper-Jane Show.
Banana split for my baby, glass of plain water for me. Dispenser man, if you please, serve my chick a mess of calories. Banana split for my baby, a glass of plain water for me.
So here we go, and first up is Michael Turback, who makes his home in Ithaca, New York, where the ice cream sundae was invented in 1892, and who has written a delicious book, A Month of Sundays, a book that I highly recommend you read, along with his three other books on ice cream. Hi, Michael. You there?
I'm here.
Well, nice to have you on the Hallie Kasper-Jane Show.
Thank you.
Oh, my, Michael, what a subject, huh? On this hot day, it's steamy, you tell me, up in Ithaca, and it is steamy in Florida where I am. It's an ice cream kind of day. And, of course, the first thing we want to do is start with the history of the American love of ice cream. So give us a little bit of that.
Well, you've already mentioned China, where we suspect the first version of ice cream happened, and it continued to move to the west and into Italy and then into France. And we were lucky because Thomas Jefferson was at one time ambassador to France, and he was what we would today call a foodie. And when he came back to America, he came back with a recipe for, well, he came back with lots of recipes, but one of them was for vanilla ice cream. And when he became president, he made sure to serve ice cream in all of the White House dinners. And since he was a bachelor, he had Dolly Madison organize these White House dinners for him. And, of course, we sort of have connected Dolly Madison to ice cream. There was a Dolly Madison brand. There may still be a Dolly Madison brand of ice cream. I'm not sure. But that's sort of the very beginning of ice cream in America.
Let's talk ice cream sundae. What exactly is an ice cream sundae?
Well, you know, that's a terrific question, because staying with Thomas Jefferson, one of the things he liked to do was pour maple syrup over the top of his vanilla ice cream. So that's a question of, was Thomas Jefferson making a sundae? But we in Ithaca like to think that the very first sundae was invented here when the local Unitarian minister gave, after a sermon that he gave on a Sunday morning, walked downtown to the local Platt and Colt Pharmacy, which is no longer with us, but it was on State Street, which is our main street here, and he ordered what he typically had, which was a dish of vanilla ice cream. But Chester Platt, who was the owner, he wanted to do something special that day, and so he reached over into his jar of cherries. He put a cherry on top and then thought, well, let me pour some of the syrup from the cherry jar over the top. And they were both so excited by the invention, they decided to attach a name to it, and they decided to name it after the day it was invented. It was a sundae. So they called it the Cherry Sundae. And what really makes, sort of has established Ithaca as the birthplace, was that Chester Platt was smart enough to start running an ad in the local newspaper for his new invention, which he called the Cherry Sundae, spelled the same, by the way, the same way that we spell the day of the week. It was changed. The spelling was changed later on.
Why did they change the spelling?
Other places claim to be the birthplace, but Ithaca has the earliest documentation.
But it is a documented case. I mean, you know what made me laugh about that? The coldest place in the world, as far as I'm concerned, is Ithaca, New York. The ice cream sundae capital of the world. I mean, that's hilarious. I mean, really.
We get those very, very cold. We live in a place where it can get, you know, to be 20 below, and it can get to be practically 100 degrees. So we get it on both extremes.
Do people eat ice cream all winter long there?
Well, our favorite place for ice cream is called Purity Ice Cream, and Purity is the longer lines, of course, there are at this time of the year, but they're there 365 days a year, scooping out for local patrons, and we do. We don't eat as much, but we eat it year round.
Good for you. I'd be shivering frozen teeth. You said, I was reading some of the stuff that you sent me, and you said there's no wrong way to make an ice cream sundae. So it's an inventive kind of thing, just like America, right?
Well, you know, one of the things that I like to say is the sundae reflects America. If you can name one dish that is a true reflection of America, it's the sundae, because the sundae reflects our genius for invention, our passion for indulgence, and our reputation for wackiness. We get sometimes very, very crazy. As a matter of fact, it's interesting that we're talking about sundaes today, because I just read a piece in today's news that Burger King, the chain, has announced that they've begun serving bacon sundaes.
Yeah, I saw that today, too.
So how wacky is that?
That's like vile, if you ask me.
True,
I don't think it's one I'm going to want to try, and they'll probably do a bang-up business. What can I tell you? It'll be good for the pork business anyway. The name of, you said the name Sunday changed from S-U-N-D-A-Y, like the day of the week, to S-U-N-D-A-E, but you didn't tell us the story there.
Well, yeah, you know, the other issue about how the Sunday became popular was pretty logical, if you think that it was invented in Ithaca, because Cornell University, of course, is here, and students come from all over the country and always have come from all over the country to go to school here. And, of course, they go home for vacations. They'd have the Sunday here, and they'd go home for vacations, and they'd tell their local drugstores and pharmacies, the places that we ate ice cream in those days, they'd tell about it. So pretty soon, ice cream was being served in small towns all over the country. And one city in particular was Evanston, Illinois. And Evanston, if anybody knows the history of Evanston, it was a very religiously conservative and perhaps still is town. And the Methodist, is a story that a Methodist minister led a group of protesters down to the local drugstore and insisted that they change the name of that dessert. They changed the spelling of that dessert somehow, so it wasn't the same name as the Sabbath. And so that fellow changed it to from S-U-N-D-A-Y to S-U-N-D-A-E. And then one of the, Evanston, of course, is right outside of Chicago. Well, Chicago happened to be the town where a lot of the early syrups were being made. So the syrup company started spelling it differently on the labels for the syrups, and pretty soon everybody was using the alternate spelling.
You know, it's an interesting thing about ice cream sundaes. I mean, I don't think any kid in the world or an adult, you know, can look back at their youth and not have some moment when they were sitting there just, you know, eating voraciously away at a sundae with dad or mom. I mean, it was so American. It's just so extraordinarily American. What accounts for its popularity? It is a bizarre kind of combination if you think about it.
Well, it's, you know, just like we said, there's no wrong way to make it. So it's just, it seems it's a treat that is so, it's inexpensive, and it can be made anywhere. It can be made at home, and it can accommodate any. I mean, it's democratic, and so anything is that so democratic sort of fits in with our culture very well. And how could something like that not become very,
absolutely
popular?
You know, in hard times, I noted that you had said that in the stock market crash in 29, that ice cream endured because it was relatively inexpensive, as you called, democratically priced. And we're having some pretty rough times today, and I think that's probably true today. There seems to be a surge in the love of ice cream these days. So there you go.
It's one of those things we can hold on to and sort of use as a way to have dessert without spending a whole lot of money.
Right. It's a cherished aspect of who we are as Americans. Michael, thanks so much for joining us. The man's name is Michael Turbak. You can find him at michaelturbak.com and at Ice Cream Sunday, spelled AE.com. Hope you'll come back and visit us at another date. And good luck in the future. And I hope it doesn't get too viciously warm for you up there in Ithaca. Thanks, Michael. Singing with the gorgeous Barbara Cook, a great Broadway star. I don't know if any of you saw the Tony Awards last weekend. Wonderful. Joining us now is Associate Food Editor at Food and Wine Magazine, Daniel Gritzer. You are just going to adore Daniel. What could be wrong with a guy who has been a professional cook in some of New York City's top American, Italian, and French kitchens, who has spent over a year working on organic farms in Italy, France, and Spain, where he fed pigs and cows and herded sheep and chased fugitive lambs and planted olive trees in a vineyard, stomped wine grapes like Lucy and I Love Lucy with his bare feet, and occasionally fled giant killer wasps. Or each month edits a column in the prestigious Food and Wine magazine called The Gastronaut Files, which tackles do-it-yourself and other ambitious home cooking prospects, and where he's tackled the ambitious subject of ice cream. So, Daniel, hi. Are you there?
Yes, I am here. Hi, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm getting hungry as this show goes along. I'm going to have to leave and go to my local, to have my, what was that horrible thing they were putting on top of ice cream? Oh, no, no, I can't even say it.
The bacon, Burger King sundae.
I think I'm going to be ill. Daniel, so tell me something. You a chocolate or a vanilla person?
I'm both. I love chocolate and vanilla. And actually, what was fun, you mentioned the Gastronaut Files column that I do most months in Food and Wine. And we asked, I think that is probably the most common ice cream question, is chocolate or vanilla? And I wanted to sort of take it a step back and say, hey, there's a question that comes before chocolate and vanilla, and it's American or French. And so that's what we looked at. It'll be the article will be in our August issue. And what that means is there's basically two base styles of ice cream. So no matter what flavors you put in, there's always this ice cream base that you're working with. And you're either working with a custard base, which is often referred to as French. So that has, you basically cook a custard. It has egg yolks in it. Or what's called American style, or also frequently it's called Philadelphia style. That is a more simple ice cream base that is just cream, milk, and sugar, so no eggs. And it's sort of it is the first question you have to answer when you're making an ice cream is what base do I want to make? Because you can make chocolate or vanilla ice cream with either base. And it's something we don't think about too often. And it's actually a really cool thing to take a close look at.
It is. It's interesting to me because, you know, I don't delineate. I mean, I'll go and I'll eat I'll eat my regular ice cream, but then, you know, when I go to a nice restaurant, I want my custard, which is really the French version, right? I don't know the people, the custard type, do people go for that as much as they do for plain old American, or is that a frou-frou type?
I think everybody, the good news is that both types are delicious, so you really can't go wrong, and both types are very popular. So, for example, Häagen-Dazs, I've looked at their ingredient lists, and they generally do a custard base, so that they have egg yolks in there.
I never knew that. That's interesting.
So there's definitely plenty of examples of custard ice cream out there, and then there are plenty of examples of American style ice cream out there that don't have the egg yolks. And I think that, you know, the interesting thing, if you actually just make a custard base and then an American style base, a non-egg yolk base, and you whip them both up into ice cream using an ice cream maker, and you don't add any other flavors, no vanilla, no chocolate, no strawberries, it's really the best way to get a sense of how they differ. And the lovely thing about American style ice cream is you get this amazing milk flavor. So then the better quality milk you use, it really comes through. You taste the milk. You know, if you drink that sort of that fresh milk, you go to a dairy and you get to drink a fresh glass of milk that was recently, you know, from the cow, and it's just like you can taste the grasses and all these flavors. That all really does come through in American style ice cream. The negative to it is that it tends to be a little bit icier. It's harder to get a good texture with it because the egg yolks that appear in the French style with the custard act as an emulsifier, and so they really can give you sort of a textural advantage. But the egg yolks also, it tastes more like a custard. You lose some of that straight up, cow flavor, that milk flavor that can be so good. So.
We're living in odd times right now, as we all know, and, you know, times are tough for people, and I guess they're looking for ways to have a lot of pleasure without having having to spend too much money. So let's talk do-it-yourself, and let's talk this concept of making homemade ice cream. Tough to make? Easy to make?
It's easy to make. American style is kind of stupidly easy to make. It really is milk, some ratio of milk and cream in a pot with sugar generally, but you could use other sweeteners. You could use maple syrup potentially. That can change the ratios a little bit as you play with other sweeteners. Sometimes, you know, a little bit of a touch of salt is nice. You heat them up together, you cool it down, you put it in your ice cream maker, and you're done. You have ice cream.
Ice cream makers matter?
What's that?
The brand of ice cream maker matter?
It does. It does make a difference. The most common at home is the Cuisinart brand, which has the most typical one is it has a sort of a freezer core that you store in your freezer and you chill it down and then you take it out and you whip up your ice cream. And that works, you know, really well for home. They also make one that has a compressor built in, so you actually can just plug it into the wall. You don't have to pre-freeze the core, and you can run it right away, which obviously comes with some convenience, but those are more expensive. There's sort of a basic rule with making ice cream, which is the faster and colder you can freeze your ice cream, the better the texture results will be. And that tends to be where it gets tricky at home. There are obviously industrial machines, and restaurants use higher grade machines that can freeze faster, freeze colder, churn faster. They can basically do in, you know, a matter of, you know, 10 minutes or maybe even fewer what a home machine would do in a half hour or 40 minutes. And you're going to get a better result with the faster machine. So there is some limitation at home, although I actually just saw Heston Blumenthal, who's a very creative one of these molecular chefs in London, has a cookbook out for home cooks where he actually recommends putting crushed dry ice into the ice cream base while it's being mixed in a KitchenAid stand mixer or any other brand stand mixer, which is pretty crazy. And apparently that helps solve this problem a little bit because dry ice is so cold.
Yikes.
So if you want to really get experimental, you could try to get some dry ice.
Oh my gosh. It's very trendy right now, ice cream, boutique ice cream, you know, with all sorts of variations on the theme, organic. We'll be discussing that later in the show. But I have to ask you something. Is there anything better than Breyer's vanilla ice cream?
I guess not. It sounds like that's your favorite.
You grow up on that stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, oh, my God. I mean, it's the only one that, you know, with the little black, it actually uses vanilla beans, don't they?
Yeah, and I love that also. I love seeing the vanilla beans in the ice cream. There are some other brands that do that also. I think Häagen-Dazs makes great ice cream. That's a brand that we actually did an ice cream tasting in the office not too long ago of a handful of mass market brands. It was not comprehensive, but Häagen-Dazs just sort of, you know, the cream of that batch rose to the top. And was them. So,
wow, that's interesting.
You know, it's actually an interesting tip is there's something with ice cream called overrum, which is basically when you're making ice cream, part of the process is you're mixing air into it, which is to a degree that's desirable. But the more air you mix in, the lighter your product gets. So if I have a pint of ice cream, depending on how much air is in it, you're paying for a certain volume, but you may be paying for a lot of air. So one really quick and dirty trick if you're in the store trying to decide between ice creams is to pay attention to the weight per volume. Or even just do, you know, feel it in your hands. If one feels heavier than the other, that's a sign of a denser ice cream, which is generally a sign of better quality.
Oh, I like that tip. I'll remember that. Homemade versus store-bought?
Homemade. You know, it's always great to make things at home, even if there are instances where a store-bought version might be better because they're working with technology that you don't have access to at home. It's still so great to make things at home, to understand, you know, first just to know what it is. Like, what are these things that we buy, including ice cream? What goes into it? And, of course, when you look at mass market products of ice cream, you can see a lot of things that you don't know why it's in there. Why is guar gum in there? Why is...
Really?
You know, and not that that's a bad thing to put in an ice cream, but by making it at home, you can, you know, it gives you some insight into these things. And, of course, when you make it at home, you don't generally need things like guar gum, so you can obviously make a simpler version of it, and it's fun. It's such a fun. I think it's a fun project, and of course, you also have total control over what milk you use. You can choose if you're concerned about organic, or you have a favorite milk source. You can, you know, it gives you all of those options, and if you are interested in using local fruits and things like that, you can go to your farmer's market and get strawberries at the height of season and make your ice cream with that. And so that gives you a lot of advantages at home that obviously when you're buying in the store, you don't have that type of control necessarily.
I love it. I love the whole concept. I love the concept of families getting together and playing with this kind of thing. And, you know, it's just we could get back to a little bit more of that probably. Craziest flavor you've run across?
Craziest flavor. I actually was just working on another story that involved. I was speaking to this ice cream maker in Portland called Salt and Straw. Mm-hmm. And they are doing these really cool collaborations with several local chefs in the area. And they have come up with some wacky flavors. One of them is a kefir lime and lemongrass ice cream that is swirled with fish sauce caramel. So this has, if you're familiar with fish sauce from Southeast Asian cooking, it's basically from like fermented, you know, anchovy gut.
I know. You know, oh my gosh.
It's extremely salty. It's pungent and funky, and it's delicious also, but it's not something you'd expect to find in an ice cream generally.
Have you tried it?
I did try it, and I liked it. I actually thought it worked really well. It's definitely a particular flavor. Some of my colleagues were less sold on it. So I think it's the kind of thing where when you're getting into that realm of sort of experimental
exotic
flavor combinations, you know, not everybody's going to go for everything.
Well,
there's also there's an ice cream maker in San Francisco called Humphrey Slocomb, which has gotten a lot of attention for their crazy flavors. And I saw they did one with prosciutto, which is a little bit like burning a bacon idea.
I don't know. What can I tell you? Not for my palate. Comfort food or Epicurean delight or D, all the above?
D, all of the above, definitely. I think that's one of the really nice things about ice cream is it is, you know, probably historically, I'm not an expert, but at one point it was strictly a luxury food that was available to the privileged few, and obviously that's not true anymore. And so I think, yeah, we do. Growing up here and eating ice cream on a hot summer's day, it's one of those childhood, you know, the ice cream scoop that falls on the sidewalk and goes splat and starts to melt. There's this imagery in my head of like what, you know, childhood with ice cream. So I think it pushes all of those wonderful buttons, and then it's incredibly decadent and luxurious, both you know, in terms of the fat content, which and also the texture of ice cream. So
nothing like ice cream, nothing. Daniel Gritzer, you are the best. Don't forget to look for Daniel's column, Gastronaut Files, in the Delectable magazine, Food and Wine. And you can meet Daniel, by the way, starting tomorrow, June 14th through June 17th, at the Food and Wine Classic in Aspen, Colorado. Or find Daniel on Twitter at dgritzer and at of course, at foodandwine.com. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you on. Hope we'll meet again.
Me too.
Okay. Bye, Daniel.
Meet me at the ice cream truck. I'll buy you an ice cream. I whip up my drumstick. That will make your eyes gleam. Lick it up quick before it melts on the floor. I got it. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. Give me some more.
I wanted to play that rap music about ice cream for a reason. We're going to do a couple of different things. I'm going to give my engineer, Matt, a thing right now, that we're going to go with our next guest now. We're probably going to cut in on her halfway through, though, because I wanted to take the break as close to the half hour as possible. But I wanted that rap music, young rap music, for a dynamic woman who is 73 years young. You are not going to believe her. Her name is Hattie Retroage, and Hattie says the opposite of old isn't young, it's new. She's, as I said, 73 years young, former dancer and beauty queen who has been featured in a Dolce & Gabbana ad for Vogue and Vanity Fair and Harper's Bazaar. She was in W in a gold lamé bathing suit. Her memoir, Sex and the Single Senior, A Cougar's Search for Love, is a must read. She's also appeared on CBS News and Howard Stern, and now she is here with us on the Hallie Castor Jane Show to counter the notion that ice cream is not good for you. This is why she's 73 plus and looking as dynamic as she does. Hattie, are you there?
I certainly am, and I'm 76, darling.
76? Oh, your bio's a few years. That's even better. That's even better.
It certainly is.
You're kicking up your heels at 76. So thanks for coming on the show. You're just delightful. So let's just get right to it. What's your secret to staying so young?
Well, I can actually, since I'm on this show, say that ice cream and saying yes to things that people say no to is a major part of my feeling and being as young as I am. There are, like, enormous pleasures that society says are not good for you, and I find that they are, which is why I happen to be a cougar. And in terms of ice cream, I actually am a health food fanatic. And that word fanatic, I can't emphasize it strongly enough. So you would imagine that because I'm that I would disdain ice cream, and I do not. To me, it's a meal, and a nourishing and delicious one at that. And I indulge, if you can even use that word, I have ice cream several times a week. And if I buy a pint, I know that I'm going to eat the whole thing. I mean, I might put it back in the freezer, and then my best exercise of the day is running back and forth to the fridge to polish it off.
But now here we are. We're talking about this thing. You know, there's so many people say, oh, it's cow's milk. It's sugar. It's, you know, the mayor of New York is going bombastic about all of these, you know, fattening food. But you don't think that's true. And the reason you don't think it's a truly fattening food is why?
Is because I only eat organic ice cream. That makes a really big difference. I know that ice cream is advertised in all sorts of ways, like slow churned. I knew that was a bunch of crap, so to speak. You want fast churning, but whatever's going to appeal to people. So if you really think about what Daniel said, you have egg yolks. Yes, Häagen-Dazs is great, but the egg yolks may not be organically raised chickens. So that's not okay with me. But there are 100% organic ice creams. One of them is Julie's, and now she's come out with chocolate and vanilla pops with delectable chocolate coating on them, bittersweet coating. They're amazing, and they taste as good as any ice cream. Listen, I've been around a while, so I tasted ice cream before there were pesticides was even a word in the vocabulary.
And there was a big difference in your mind between that and what you call organic? You can taste the difference?
Oh, yeah. Everything has really not the same flavor as it once had. So since it's not there, I'm not going to preach to people and say you should taste it the way I tasted it. I say that about sexuality, but that's, again, another topic, another topic.
Well, I don't know. Somehow ice cream and sexuality and sensuality somehow go together in my mind. I don't know.
You bet they come together, dear.
Maybe that's just myself. But what I want to ask you is, you know, you're the cougar lady. I mean, so you're going to attribute all that, you know, vim and vigor and get up and go and to eating ice cream, huh?
Ice cream and excellent food and saying yes to excellent food. So I have been a consumer advocate since the 60s. I wrote the first organic certification form in America, and John Lennon was a member of the group that I was part of. So we spoke about very high-quality food. And when you're talking ice cream, when you have the very best milk from grass-fed cows, full fat, which is healthy from grass-fed cows and organic, and no GMOs, no genetically modified organisms in it, so you're talking of food. Ice cream is a delectable food. It's got milk in it. Milk is the first food of a child. So it's got milk, and it's got organic sugar, which is good for energy, and it's evaporated cane juice, so it's healthy. Then you have wonderful flavors, and then you have all the pleasure of knowing you're tasting something and having a real treat for your body. It's not a great idea to keep saying no, 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 but you find things that you can say yes to that really enhance your life and your energy and your joy and your fitness and your beauty and your sexuality and all those things. But it is very important that if you're going to have ice cream, which I do and I love, to have it made organically. Check those ingredients. Organic ice cream is not going to have guar gum and corn syrup and all that stuff, which though it might still taste good, you're not fooling your body. Your body knows what's good. And if you keep eating the really good ice cream like Julie's, let's say, then you're going to stay young and vital and all the other things that I am.
You also talked to me about food combining. You're really a proponent of watching what you put together in your stomach, right? So let's talk about that,
Sally,
a little bit.
Yes, Sally. I wrote this book, Retro Age, Four Steps to a Younger You. Both that and my memoir, Sex and the Single Senior, are available on Amazon. Now, in the four steps to a younger you, the first step, E, it's E-A-S-E, eating, attitude, skincare, and exercise. The first step is eating, and I talk about food combining, and hardly anybody does that. Now, years ago, there was a book called Fit for Life, talked about it, people did it, but it fell by the wayside, but not with me, and I never, ever combine animal protein, even cheese, because I don't eat most animals except for fish, you never combine animal protein with complex carbohydrates. So mostly every dish you talk about is a no-no. You're going to clog up your digestion, give yourself a big stomach, and be sluggish and not feel too terrific. So I do what's called food combining. It started in the 1930s with a Dr. Hay, and he did all the scientific research, and nobody's basically following that. So I hope another book. I think, Hallie, you told me that a book is coming out again.
He is. He's got a new book coming out soon. I think we're going to have him on the show, and I'm looking forward to it because I'm big on that myself. I think you have to watch what you put together. So, Hattie, before you before you leave us, your great wisdom for all of us to keep us kicking up our heels when we get to be that gorgeous 76 and look as good as you do. And, guys, you need to go find her pictures online. She's dynamic. Oh, my gosh, she's gorgeous.
It's under Hattie Retro Age. I'm also on YouTube, Hattie Retro Age. There are
I'm gonna give that when we say
great.
Goodbye. I got it all written out for
there
me.
There I am.
Yeah, I love somebody knows how to sell herself. Good for you.
Don't lose hope in yourself. And the most important thing is honor the fact that your particular beauty is very real. If you compare yourself to other people, you might keep falling short. Don't do that. Find where you are truly beautiful in your own unique way. Honor that. Cultivate it. Treat yourself like you're treating yourself to ice cream, a treat to who you are, that special, extraordinary, remarkable child of God. And that will make you glow. It really will.
Well, you glow, and I can hear it across the airwaves. Thanks, Hattie. I really appreciate you being here. That is Hattie Retro, as she calls herself, a living example that beauty, sexuality, and spirituality are enhanced with age. A fit and fabulous senior is our newest cougar friend. Hattie, I hope you'll come back. You can find Hattie at holisticallyhattie.com, on Facebook at holisticallyhattie, and on YouTube at Hattie Retro Grade. So, again, folks, what a lady. Love her to death. We're moving quickly because we've got lots of guests still lined up after the half hour, so we're going to do just that. We're going to take our break, and everyone sit back, relax. If you got some ice cream, good time to have a nibble while we recognize our sponsors. When we return from the break, we will be talking to Felicia Hatcher of Feverish Ice Cream, a gourmet popsicle and ice cream catering company specializing in vegan-friendly and spiked eye popsicles, and with Sophia Britton of Victory Garden in New York City. You are listening to The Hallie Castor-Jane Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. The Hallie Castor-Jane Show is brought to you today by Fortel Solutions, a recognized leader in technology that solves today's global challenges for planning and managing the built environment. For more information about Fortel Solutions, visit www.fortelsolutions.com.
Do 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 do
Oh, my God. Oh, that man just cracks me up. Okay, guys, we are back on the Helicast with Jane Show, where today we are talking ice cream. What you just heard was a clip from the great Eddie Murphy's famous ice cream bit. Joining us now is Felicia Hatcher of Feverish Ice Cream, a gourmet popsicle and ice cream catering company specializing in vegan-friendly and spiked popsicles. Felicia has been honored by the White House as one of the top 100 entrepreneurs under 30 and featured on media outlets such as NBC's Today Show, The Wall Street Journal, and The Food Network. And we are delighted to have Felicia with us. Welcome to the show, Felicia Hatcher.
Hey, Holly, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Yeah. It's hot in Florida, so it's always good.
I'm in Florida, too. As a matter of fact, and I was just down by your way the other day. So you're the chief popsicle. I love it. The Feverish Ice Cream. You have had quite the success. You got it. We got to start with you from the beginning because yours is a great story. How did you get started?
The embarrassing, wacky story of Feverish Ice Cream is I fell down chasing after an ice cream truck in heels. And that's when the light bulbs kind of went off of, like, one, I'm way too old to chase after an ice cream truck. I think I was about 23 at the time. And then number two is, why hasn't anyone come up with, like, a cooler way for adults to enjoy ice cream? And that's kind of how Feverish was born.
Love it. I absolutely love it. And you hadn't had a drink before you did this, right?
I did, actually. I was leaving a pool party, so.
Oh, well, there you go. That'll get make you creative, right?
I know, right?
There it is. Tell me, first of all, do you eat ice cream?
Oh, I love ice cream. I'm such a dessert fanatic that I actually got married at a donut shop 3 years ago. So I love desserts. I've always loved desserts ever since I was a kid, and I definitely always loved ice cream.
So can we attribute your success to the health benefits of ice cream? I mean, we were listening to our friend before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she had some very interesting information. I loved it.
Yeah, she's a character. So let's talk vegan friendly. I want to know what vegan friendly means.
I mean, for us, we don't use any animal products in our pops and our ice cream. So. You know, we use more alternatives. So coconut milk is something, an ingredient that we use a lot in our popsicles, as well as rice milk and almond milk. And the main reason we decided to do that is because about 5 years ago, my husband became a very strict vegetarian and kind of dabbled in being a vegan for a while. And we just wanted to be able to introduce people to, like, a new way of, a new experience for ice cream. Because a lot of times when we think healthy stuff, vegan stuff, organic, a lot of people are like, oh, God, that means it tastes bad. And so we're like, you know, that's not necessarily true. It's almost really just kind of re-educating our palate.
Okay, and I think that's fair. And we get used to one thing. You know, sometimes you have to go for the alternative, and you find out the alternative may even be better. Let's discuss your gourmet popsicles. What is your gourmet popsicle?
Well, our top flavor is our chocolate banana sea salt. Chocolate banana sea salt and pineapple basil are our top flavors. And, you know, quite a few years ago, my husband and I got introduced to Mexican paletas. And that's really more the form of our popsicles as opposed to the traditional American popsicle where it's mostly water-based, artificial dyes and ingredients. Ours are completely, you know, fruit-based, literally just pureed down, trying to find the ripest fruits, and then just a very different, you know, just more eclectic flavors. So flavors that adults will love, kids absolutely love them too, but they're more tailored toward adults, especially when you start talking about the spiked options.
And you are spiking, because you do mostly catering, right? Is that correct?
We do a lot of catering, and a lot of creating custom flavors for marketing campaigns. So, like, Maker's Mark was the one who kind of launched us into doing spiked popsicles. And they shipped us a bunch of bourbon, and we created a mango bourbon flavor for them, which we added to our list because people absolutely loved it. So, yeah, I mean, that's usually how we come up with a lot of flavors, either through clients or customers are suggesting flavors. They want custom flavors or custom colors to match their wedding or their logo. It's usually how we come up with a lot of our flavors.
So, Felicia, where do I get these spiked popsicles?
You can order them up anytime. And then, of course, you know, we're in Miami, so it's like South Beach and Party Capital.
Right.
And so you can definitely find them at a lot of locations on the beach.
Okay, well, I'll have to do that. I was down there last weekend, and I had no idea. Popsicles are the new cupcake, you say, huh?
Yes, popsicles are definitely the new cupcake. A lot of, like, small gourmet popsicle carts and shops are starting to pop up definitely within the last year, and I think it's a really interesting trend. I think I'm really excited about it. And I'm really excited to see what the bigger companies are going to kind of do in response to it. You know, the popsicles, when you think about it, they're definitely more expensive than what people would find in a store. You know, you're talking about anywhere from $2, $2 all the way to $5 I've seen for a popsicle. And you can buy a whole box, you know, in most grocery stores for that. But I think people want, you know, people really care about what's going into their body these days, and especially when it comes to desserts. You know, they want to indulge, but they also want a healthier option as well.
You're quite the entrepreneur. The White House was correct here. Hipster ice cream carts and trucks, I mean, you're eco-friendly as well. Give me a break. What happened to the ice cream man on that horrible truck that must have used 2,000 gallons of gas?
Man, he's like so like 1940s. I don't know. you know, honestly, we just wanted to build a company that we would love to hang out with if it wasn't ours, if we showed up at a party. So it's really injecting my personality, my husband's personality, into a company. You know, the bright colors, the music, you know, in the past we used to set up like a little lounge area. And we really just want it to be a really fun experience. And so that's why we do so many of those things. And then we, you know, we have a big social mission behind our business, from being eco-friendly, from, you know, trying to educate people on healthier lifestyles and healthier eating habits. But then we also run a program called Poppreneurs.
I was just going to go there with you. And I'm gonna, before you talk about that, let me just say this, because I just want to everybody to listen, because if there's a business model to follow today, Felicia's is it. I am so impressed with who you are and what you've built here, and so I wanted to say that before you get there. Listen to this program that she has started called Poppreneurs. Now tell us about it.
Okay. So a portion of every popsicle we sell goes directly to charity. And one of the biggest things that we started, because, you know, my husband and I, we lost our jobs. And that's what helped kind of catapult us in the direction of, like, all right, let's take this crazy idea that I had and let's start a business. So we wanted to be able to help other people create their own opportunities. And in South Florida, in Broward County, there's a 31% youth unemployment rate, which
Unreal.
Is crazy.
Right.
I mean, you just think about the skills that kids aren't getting, and think about the skills that we got with our first jobs. Kids aren't able to get those first jobs down here, not with a 31% unemployment rate. So we started by donating a cart to a group of girls in Broward and teaching them everything that they need to do to run their own business from the ground up. You know, they go out to some urban farms and some U-picks, and they pick strawberries, they pick fruits. They come back, they actually get a chance to make their own product. So they see from start to finish, this is what it takes to create a product and bring it to market. And then they turn around and they sell it. And the thing that we like the most is they actually get to keep the profits. Half goes directly to them. Half goes into a scholarship fund.
I think it's fabulous. You do have a new book coming out. It's called How to Start a Business on a Ramen Noodle Budget.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's funny. It's quirky. And it's just practical. You know, a lot of people have an idea, have a business in them, and they're so fearful. And, like, fear is not real. It's all in our mind. you know, one of the biggest things people think, hey, I have to have a lot of money. You know, we started our business by buying two ice cream carts off of Craigslist, like the luxury shopping site Craigslist, right? And we feel like, hey, if we can do it and just build it and break the idea and the dream up to pieces and just keep growing and investing in our business, you know, we'd love to be able to show people how to do the exact same thing.
Lady, I'm impressed, and I can't thank you enough for stopping by the Hallicaster Jane Show. I wish I had an hour just to spend with you. Felicia Hatcher of Feverish Ice Cream. You can find Felicia on Facebook at Feverish Fever Pops, on Twitter at Feverish Miami, and on the web at feverishicecream.com. Good luck, lady. Fabulous. Just fabulous. Thanks. We're moving on. We are probably going to go a little longer than the hour today. We had booked an hour and a half for today's show because these people are all so interesting. I can't stop talking, and they were talking about one of my favorite subjects, and I hope yours, ice cream. And so now we're going to have another treat, and this one is Sophia Britton from studying international relations at Georgetown University to the French Culinary Institute in New York City to a website, kitchencaravan.com, which focuses on teaching people how to cook healthy foods in tune with the seasons, and with an emphasis on a holistic attitude towards food and how to learn from other cultures, Sophia moved to the brick-and-mortar environment when she opened her shop in New York City. And now she's on our show, and we want to welcome Sophia Britton, founder and chef at Victory Garden. How are you, Sophia?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I appreciate you hanging around for so long to talk to us. All right, first let's start with the name Victory Garden. For me, I have a name idea where that name comes for you. What does the Victory Garden name mean?
Well, I wanted a name for my store that would bring in the fact that I get my milks and a lot of my ingredients from local farms. And Victory Gardens were started between World War I and World War II as a result of food rationing in the United States. People were encouraged to grow their own food. And lately that's been taken up again by the local food movement. And so I really like the strength of that in bringing in the local aspect of my shop.
I love it.
On another note, my name is actually Victoria Sophia, so I wanted something that would have my name in it as well. And then,
oh, okay.
Yeah. And then the third aspect was that I use a lot of floral essences in my ice creams, and the garden aspect of it is there too with the Victory Garden.
Well, I think it's a great name, and it conjures all sorts of terrific images. So let's talk about what you're all about in terms of your product, and that's goat's milk. You talk to us about goat's milk. Why goat's milk and not cow's milk as your main ingredient?
Well, I started my business because I started to see a lot of soft serve yogurt shops pop up around the city, and a lot of them are just made with bases, you know, chemical bases that people mix in and then put it in the machine and there you go. But I'm a locavore. I shop at the farmers market. I know a lot of local farmers. And I wanted to create a product that would be healthy and light and local. And I studied holistic nutrition a couple of years ago, and I myself started drinking goat's milk instead of cow's milk. I mean, I don't drink a lot of milk in general, but when I do, I prefer goat's milk. And so the idea came from that. I knew a goat milk farmer at the time that I started working with, and I started developing the recipes, and that led to the shop.
A couple of things here. One is that there's a lot of allergies associated with cow's milk. I know I'm one of those people who was desperately allergic to cow's milk and had to drink goat's milk as a kid. I travel a lot, and, you know, goat's milk all over the world. I mean, goats, you know, and that's just not the case in this country. So is it hard for you to educate people as to, you know, the benefits of goat's milk and goat meat, really, if you're a meat eater, and using it as a food source?
I would say yes and no. I have a lot of very knowledgeable customers that they come to me because they're lactose intolerant. They come to me because they're aware of, you know, the health benefits of goat's milk. And then I have a lot of people who think that it's just like a crazy idea, and they're like, oh, like let's see what this tastes like, that kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I've been so happy. A lot of people come into the store because they're curious, they really want to try it, and they end up loving it. And I've been really happy to get, you know, like my customer base is so diverse, and that's just really great to see.
There's a subtle difference in the taste. Can you describe it?
See, the thing is, I'm so used to it that I have a really hard time describing it. I feel like when people come in and they ask about the difference in the taste, I say it's more of a difference in the texture. The ice cream is much lighter. It's much more refreshing. You don't feel as bloated after you have it. It doesn't feel so heavy. Some people will say that they'll taste like a little bit more grassiness in it. But I really like that flavor of the milk.
I have the old line about once you go to goat's milk, you never go back to cow's milk. But that
yeah.
being said, you speak about a holistic attitude towards food. So give me what that really means. Tell me what that means to you.
Well, I really liked what Hattie was talking about. And if you really indulge in things and really enjoy them, you should eat foods that are made with real ingredients. And you shouldn't feel guilty about them if you're really enjoying something. I think I have what my biggest problem is that a lot of people come in and they see soft serve and they're like, oh, does it have zero fat? Oh, it's yogurt. It doesn't have any calories. And I think that a lot of people have been tainted by, marketing messages that yogurt doesn't have any calories. And yogurt's a really wonderful traditional food, but it does. It has fat and it's good for you. I just try to encourage people to like look beyond like the number of calories and the amount of fat and look, this is goat's milk from a local farm. It's coming from the farm, it's coming to the ice cream, and that's what you're eating. It's made with love. I just want people to look beyond the zero fat, zero calories. That's what healthy means, because I think that's what healthy means.
Let me help you along on that one. Since I started with the zero fat and zero calories, this country has gotten 10 times fatter than it ever was. So, I mean,
exactly.
There's something
yeah.
very bizarre about all of that. And one day this show is going to go and look into that. Your ingredients are prophylactic, antibiotic-free, and your goats are fed on local hay and grass, which makes a difference in the taste of their milk, I assume,
yeah.
and the health of your product. I think that's a point to be made. We're talking ice cream today, so what flavors are your specialty?
I would say my number one selling flavor is the salted caramel, but I would say my number two is the Victory Garden Herbal Blend, and we take a bunch of different herbs from the market. We get rosemary and sage and thyme, apple mint. We put cardamom and lavender in it, and then we'll always put in what we find. So sometimes we'll find lemon balm, sometimes we'll find anise hyssop, something new. And a lot of our customers really like that it's always changing. It's not like a standardized flavor. It's something that will change through the season, and it'll always be a little bit different.
But I have to ask you this. Are we getting away too far away from that old American ice cream? Are we going to the other way? Tell me.
I don't think so. I think food is always about he was talking about Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, brought rice from Italy over and started growing it in North Carolina. Like, food is always about trying new things, adapting to different, cultural changes, things like that. I'm just taking the next step, I guess.
I think it's fabulous. But do people still ask you for chocolate and vanilla?
Yeah, my pet peeve is that people will come in and say, do you have plain vanilla? And I'm like, vanilla isn't plain. Vanilla is, a really lovely spice. And we treat it like it's a spice, and we rotate it through the machines. But, we do have chocolate. We do have chocolate.
I love the whole concept of what you're doing, and I love your background, and I love the name Victory Garden, and I love the name that your real name is Victoria. Sophia, I can't wait to try your product. We've been speaking with Sophia Britton of Victory Garden in New York City. You got to go try her stuff. I mean, from my friends who got me to her, her stuff is fabulous. Visit her website, victorygardenneworkcity.com, on Facebook at Victory Garden New York City, and on Twitter at Victory Garden New York.
Icy, creamy ice cream, cold and sweet. Icy, creamy ice cream, can't be beat.
Icy, creamy ice cream, I giggle when I eat my icy, creamy ice cream. Oh, what a treat!
Can't do an ice cream show without Barney singing. We are ready almost to close out the show. Our final guest is maybe the saving the best for last. We're going to find out. Her name is Carrie Sirachi of Ice Cream Cakes. Wow, this lady is something else. From a tattoo artist to a professional cyclist to a junior high school art teacher to artisan ice cream sculptor. Welcome, Carrie. That's quite a journey.
Thank you so much.
I love this. You got to tell me. You make homemade and from scratch ice creams and vegan ice creams, and you've got to just tell me what the difference is between your homemade and your scratch and what have you.
Well, I mean, basically what your guest has been saying before is that the ice cream is made from scratch. We don't start out with a bag of dairy and sugar that's been pre-pasteurized at a dairy, and then we just add flavors to it. We build everything from, you know, the bottom up, organic dairy, organic eggs, organic sugar, and then we build the custard that way. And the same with the vegan ice creams with the coconut milk and organic agave nectar.
And so that's the difference between vegan ice cream is with just no milk, no cow's milk, I assume, right?
Exactly. No animal products at all.
No animal products. Yeah. I just want to make sure because I don't think that everybody gets that. You use organic dairy, sugar, and eggs in your custard-style ice creams, yes? So it's all organic. Other ingredients, coconut milk, organic, agave nectar.
The coconut milk's not organic. The agave nectar is. Whenever we can use organic, you know, in terms of finances, in terms of it being something that's viable, we do.
Okay. And you're also a gluten-free.
Yes. Where our cakes, I'm sorry.
Now I was going to say, tell me about gluten-free, what that means, because a lot of people hear it and they're not quite sure what it is.
Well, gluten is part of the wheat that a lot of people have allergies to, and if they have celiac disease, they can't ingest it at all because it makes their it makes them not absorb nutrients from their food. And I had a couple customers when I first started ask me if I could do gluten-free. And when I did first start making ice cream cakes, I came up with a cake recipe that was kind of half cake, half brownie, because I wanted a cake that would still be moist and wouldn't have those little air pockets that get those little ice crystals in it like a Baskin-Robbins cake would. So I developed a denser, moister, gooier kind of cake. And that took less flour. And so I figured if I was using less flour, it wouldn't make as much of a difference if I use gluten-free flour. And then over the years, it's developed. I mix up my own gluten-free flour. And you can't tell the difference. And so my cakes are gluten-free, and our ice creams are gluten-free. There's only a couple flavors in the cake that do have gluten, and that's just because, like our blueberry cheesecake, I've tried gluten-free graham crackers, and they're not as good. So that we make an exception for. And we have a black and tan flavor, or a half and half ice cream that's made with beer, and that's got gluten, and then it has malt powder in it too, so that has gluten. Mm. But everything else, pretty much gluten-free. We try and have some form of ice cream for everybody. vegan, gluten-free, and dogs.
Sounds good. Now, what is doggy ice cream?
It is a yogurt egg base with sweet potatoes, peanut butter, and bacon. So there's no cream and no sugar because dogs don't really need cream and sugar.
Uh-huh. So you're even making treats for the family pet.
Yes, and they love it.
I'll bet they do. Now, this is what fascinated me about you, and that's these cakes that you're making using this stuff. Zombies, sharks eating people, honey badgers, and you're about to do a cake on a drag queen, Sharon Needles.
Yes, I am. And then I get to do David Bowie, too.
Talk to me. What is this? This is like art made out of what?
Out of ice cream, it is. It's a layer of cake for the base, cake and ice cream for the base, and then I use the ice cream like clay, basically. It's just a little bit more volatile. I have to get it in and out of the freezer. You know, it takes a little bit more. It's more of a process than clay, but it's the same concept. And then we cover all of our cakes in ganache because I don't like buttercream. And I think, you know, having a chocolate or a white chocolate coating around it, and it freezes kind of like a magic shell and makes – it also is practical because when the cake sits out on the table for, you know, 20, 30 minutes or so, as the ice cream melts, the ganache stays hard and keeps the shape. And then all of the details, you know, eyeballs and lips and teeth and things like that that need to be done, you know, with fine detail or smaller, we make with candy clay that we make on site also. That's, you know,
candy
chocolate.
Clay. How long does it take you to do something like that?
It's a process that takes a couple days. Mostly just it's a lot of downtime, though. It's a lot of, you know, you take it out and you work on it for 20 minutes, and then you have to put it back in the freezer for 3 hours. And then you take it back out again, work on it for 10 minutes, put it back in the freezer for a couple hours. So it goes back and forth. So I like to have, a few cakes going at one time so I can get more done. But I like to have, a week or two's notice to get a cake done.
So, Carrie, how much does a cake like that cost?
This ranges in price depending on size. A 7-inch cake is about $50. A 6-inch cake we can do for $35. Quarter sheet cake is, more like $150. But these are really heavy cakes. I mean, even the cake just by itself is pretty dense and very heavy. And then you put the ice cream on top, and they're heavy and they're rich. I would agree with your, guest before in that I think it's better use real ingredients, use real fat, and just have smaller portions than to be trying to eat fat-free and things that are just filled with fillers and chemicals and, substitutes.
Absolutely. So if somebody is listening to the show today, can they order a cake by sending you a photo and saying, could you make this for me?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
The problem with the shipping, though, is that they have to go in the cooler. They have to be on dry ice. We have to ship them overnight. So that gets a little expensive. And I can't guarantee how they're going to, after shipping, how they're going to look.
So if they want to get in touch with you, you have a website, and your website is what?
Icecreamcakes.com.
Well, there we go. I wish we had more time, Carrie, but what an amazing thing. You'll go on her website, and you'll see one of her creations. They're phenomenal. Thanks, Carrie. You just proved that there's something for everyone in the world of ice cream, for sure. I love it. And I love all of my guests. You guys have just been a hoot. I mean, this has just been a great, fun, delicious, what can I say, how to do the metaphor show. And I thank you all for stopping by and being a part of today's ice cream little doodah here. So we are now at the end of that show. Let me tell you about next week's The Hallie Caster Jane Show. We've got one hot show for you on June 20th and 21st. And I want to tell you that we will be delving into, listen to this, L.A. Noir. Now, what does that mean? We are going to discuss mid-century Los Angeles, the land of sunshine, palm trees, and orange groves, and also the home of one of America's most notorious gangsters, Mickey Cohn. We'll be speaking with Terry Tariba, author of the recently released book, Mickey Cohn, The Life and Crimes of L.A.'s Notorious Mobster. Also joining us is investigative journalist and Pulitzer Prize nominee Gus Russo, whose book Supermob, How Sidney Korshak and His Criminal Associates Became America's Hidden Power Brokers. He's going to tell the startling story about Sidney, also called the Fixer Korshak, who from the 40s until his death in the 90s was not only the most powerful lawyer in the world, according to FBI, but the enigmatic player behind countless 20th century power mergers, political deals, and organized crime chicaneries. Rounding out the hour will be J. Victor McGuire, director of, listen to this, education at the new Las Vegas The Mob Museum. And I can promise you there will also be some surprises. That's next week on The Hallie Caster Jane Show, talk radio for fine minds. Stay in touch, won't you? You can visit me at HallieCasterJane.com, on Facebook at HallieCasterJane, and on Twitter at HallieCasterJane. I love to hear from you. And I love you guys in the chat room. You are the best. You make this show so much fun. Thanks for being part of it. Also, our radio player is available to you from HallieCasterJane.com. You can embed it on your own webpage for easier listening and share it with your friends. You can also listen to us on the mobile site mblogtalkradio.com. Please do. I want to give a special thank you to our engineer, Matt McCluskey. This was a tough show. We had lots of little things going on, a bevy of guests, and he did a bang-up job like he always does. Thank you, Matt. So, till next week, this is Hallie Caster Jane. It's a wrap.
You have been listening to the Hallie Caster Jane Show, talk radio for fine minds. The Hallie Caster Jane Show airs Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Hallie Kasser Jane Show is produced by Eric Friedman and Mark McCluskey. Music by the fabulous Sean Jones. I am T.L. Walker, thanking you for stopping by. Until next time.